You're listening to Overnights. Mark Sutton's your host this morning, and it's time now to find out what's been going on in the world of movies and DVDs with Eddie Ivamy from Jordan and Eddie, the movie guys, which you can check out at jordanandevy.wordpress.com. G'day, Eddie. How are you?
Morning, Mark. How are you, mate?
Very, very well. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problems at all.
Now, before we get on to the movies you selected for us today, I just want to get your thoughts in general on the movies that are out at the cinema at the moment. Because obviously, it's a pretty bad time of year for movies. You know, it's not yet Oscar season, so the prestige movies aren't coming out. And it's after the American summer, so the blockbusters aren't coming out. So I tried to go see a movie the other weekend, and there was absolutely nothing on.
It is a bit of the dumping period at the moment, mate. I can't deny that. Unless you're obviously a kid on school holidays, you can go see The Secret Life of Pets and films like that. But look, there actually is a couple of really good ones out. Maybe not the biggest films of the year, but two I really enjoyed. One which was Pete's Dragon, a remake of the old Disney film there. It's well worth a look if you're got some kids on school holidays or even for some just general family entertainment. It's a really lovely little film, the Pete's Dragon remake. And also Clint Eastwood's latest film, Sully, with Tom Hanks, is a really good drama and a bit of a return to form for Clint Eastwood, who has probably over the last 5 years, well, he had a big hit with American Sniper, but I wouldn't suggest that his films over the last 5 or so years have been too good at all. So it was great.
No, bloody awful, I would say.
Yeah, well, look, I was American Sniper, which got all this awards love and box office, I really didn't actually think that much of. And Sully, I wasn't expecting too much, but I really, really enjoyed it. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the year's big players at the next Oscars. So there is a couple of films out there, but we are waiting on Oscar season to come around, which shouldn't be too far around the corner.
All right, well, let's turn to the movies you selected for us to recommend or not recommend, as the case may be, once we get to the movies. Let's start with this movie, The Sea of Trees. Before I got your email saying that's the movie you want to talk about, I knew one thing about this movie, and that's that when it was at Cannes Film Festival, it was booed.
Mate, it absolutely was. from what I understand, it's one of the most kind of infamous screamings at the Cannes Film Festival, which isn't easy to do. There's been a fair few interesting stories about that. But yeah, the Sea of Trees was literally booed upon release at the festival, and it was mocked. You know, everyone who saw it mocked it in their interviews. There wasn't really a single reviewer or someone that stood up for the film. It was just absolutely panned, and it took quite a while. So this was last year. We're going back towards the start of last year, and only just in the last few weeks has it been released here in Australia on DVD and also around the world in most places, pretty much, yeah. Direct-to-DVD, a tiny cinema release in America that saw it make $2,000 on its opening weekend. So, look, The Sea of Trees doesn't have a great history, despite the fact that it stars Matthew McConaughey, Naomi Watts, Ken Watanabe, who's very famous from The Last Samurai, and also directed by Gus Van Sant, who has had big films like Good Will Hunting and Milk, and he is a pretty good filmmaker, it must be said. He's had a few flops, but nothing ever quite like The Sea of Trees.
Well, the thing about Gus Van Sant, I'm a bit of a fan of his in general, you know, and as you said, like Milk was a great movie. His old movies, Drugstore Cowboy, My Own Private Idaho, they were great, great movies. And then he has these sort of sentimental sort of movies he makes, like Good Will Hunting, which are pretty good, but they're a bit more, you know, run-of-the-mill or not. That's a bit unfair. But
they're sappy, aren't they?
Sappy movies.
Yeah, they're appealing to that audience.
But generally, I think he's a pretty solid filmmaker. And yeah, I checked this out last night on your... recommendation's the right word. But yeah, it doesn't have a lot going for it.
No, and it's funny, Mark, because there's moments in it, though, and when you look at the cast and you think, this really could have been a special movie. It could have been really different. It could have been something very unique. And look, the actors are proven actors. They all can deliver great performances. And to me, they seem quite lost in the film, like they weren't really sure on how the tone was going or what they wanted out of their characters. So I think a lot of the failings of the film really must go back to Van Sant, which is, as you say, surprising because he has some really good films. Like I call Elephant, the film about the Columbine High School shooting.
That was amazing.
Yeah, one of my favourite films I've seen. It's not a entertaining film, but it's a effective, very emotionally resonant film. And Good Will Hunting's obviously a favourite of many. But yeah, this Sea of Trees, it's just, you can see why it was mocked. I don't think it was as bad as I thought it was going to be. Like, I was preparing myself for the worst film of the year. And to me, it wasn't that. But yeah, I mean, you can't really stand up for it. It has a very few little things going for it that save it. But gee whiz, I don't really know what happened here.
It's set in Japan.
Yeah, so look, Matthew McConaughey's character here, of he's a college professor, Arthur Brennan, and he has just gone through some recent tragedies with his wife, and he goes to Japan, to the place at the base of Mount Fuji, which is known as a suicide forest. So this is a real thing. So they've obviously based that part on fact. This forest here in Japan has, I think, roughly 100 suicides a year that take place there, if not even more.
Oh, yeah, it was actually, I suppose, interesting might be the wrong word, but one thing I did find interesting about the movie was learning about the fact that this is a real place, this suicide forest in Japan.
Yeah, and I think for, you know, the thousands of years or however long that forest has been known there, it's been this place where these suicides would take place, I guess a spiritual place and a place of much meaning to the Japanese culture. And so we have this, yeah, Arthur Brennan, this McConaughey character, head over there to, end his life, commit suicide, and he runs into another man, a Japanese man, played by Ken Watanabe, who's in the forest as well, and he's actually lost and trying to get back out. And these two start up a relationship, a friendship together, where they're trying to get out of this forest. It's a large forest, and all these spiritual musings on life and flashbacks to Arthur's life, what's led him here, it takes place. And I guess the kind of sloppy, heavy-handed direction of Van Sant takes full force once these things start happening. And there's a few just odd things in the film, like the music I found really off-putting, the performances, like I said, a bit lost in their own characters. I just don't know if these actors, who are, again, all good actors, didn't really know what was going on. And it has a very, without ruining it, an odd kind of last 20 minutes.
That's for sure.
Yeah, so I don't want to ruin that for people, but there's some very weird things that happen through there. And it feels like a Hallmark movie, doesn't it? That's probably one of the best way to put it, a kind of daytime soapy movie that's kind of been hidden in this really big budgeted production. So I just don't know what Van Sant was thinking, to be honest with you.
You mentioned the acting. You know, McConaughey, obviously since True Detective came out, he's now the go-to guy to deliver a sort of pseudo-philosophical monologue that goes for ages about his thoughts on the world. And he did it really well in True Detective. And in this one, there's just so many scenes of him just sitting around in the forest, routing on about stuff, but it didn't seem like it was very meaningful.
No, and for a movie that clearly wanted to be very meaningful, it's odd that you never really resonate with much that's going on. And again, there's small things that are quite emotionally effective, and Naomi Watts was quite good in her small screen time, but look, McConaughey's been on a pretty amazing run since, you say, like, your True Detective, your Dallas Buyers Club, Interstellar, Wolf of Wall Street. He's been in some really good films over the last 5 years and really ramped up his career, but this is definitely a big, probably wake-up call for him as well, that maybe it's time he looks to do a little bit, or something a little bit different. He's maybe becoming a little bit boorish as well with these characters, as you say, you know, the talking about life and the meaning of things and all these pretty deep issues. It might be time for him, hopefully not another romantic comedy, but something a little bit lighter.
Sahara 2.
Yeah, oh, mate, I just don't know if anyone can handle that. but yeah, look, very odd. I must admit that it seems like what I read in the press that McConaughey stuck up for the film a little bit, especially at Cannes, but I wouldn't imagine that these actors would be putting this down as a highlight of their CV. But again, look, you hear all the, you go and look at Rotten Tomatoes or you look at some history on the film and you see these really dire, virtually zero-star reviews. You'd be thinking it's as bad as The Room or something like that, but look, it's not that bad, but it's certainly not a film that you could recommend, even for fans of McConaughey and Watts, who it would have quite a number of fans that watch their films because they're really, really good performers. Yeah, Sea of Trees, other than the nice-looking locations of Japan and the forest, which actually has an odd beauty to it, even though it has this really terrible kind of history.
It's quite well shot, the movie.
Yeah,
it's beautiful to look at.
It is, which you can, again, see, it's obviously a film with quite a budget, and I would imagine that they would have been really positioning this film as a kind of Oscar bait film. Absolutely, you look at that, I think they would have been thinking in the back of their minds, the studio and the people involved in it, that, hey, this could be a really big hit for us. And obviously Cannes knocked that on the head pretty quick.
There's a couple of things in it that I thought, you know, in this day and age, you can't really just sort of put that out there without proper research. Ken Watanabe's character is this sort of pretty stereotypical, like, mystical Japanese man. You know, he just sort of dispenses wisdom. And then you never really learn why he wanted to commit suicide much, except for the fact that he something about his job.
Yeah, but it was something like he was going to get demoted or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but he keeps saying, you know, suicide is part of Japanese culture. Suicide is you know, and you don't understand that. And that just seems to me, obviously everyone knows about, you know, the history of the samurai and stuff, but it just seemed to me the greatest cliche. And it meant that he wasn't a real character. He was just sort of voicing these Western stereotypes about what Japanese people were.
Yeah, and I think that must stem quite a lot as well to the screenwriter, Chris Sparling, who wrote the really good thriller with Ryan Reynolds called Buried. But I think, yeah, maybe he's gone out and written this film and probably not paid proper heedance to the culture of Japan properly. And like you say, it's a probably Western stereotype. Yeah, he doesn't make much of a mark at all. And perhaps if that character was better and more well-rounded, it would have made McConaughey's character a lot better as well, because they spend virtually, you know, a half, if not more, of the screen time pretty much together in this forest. And there's some really odd things that happen through the forest, like a random flash flood and people keep tripping over rocks and things like that. It's an odd way to keep the story going forward. You can tell they were probably struggling with coming up with reasons to keep them talking about all these life musings type things around campfires and in the cave in the middle of a storm. And it's just odd. You can tell something went amiss, whether it was during the script or during the making of the film, but it was just a loss. They lost themselves in it.
They did. And yeah. I also wonder as well, to make a movie about suicide and depression, you've got to be a bit careful. I mean, these are such serious topics. And if you don't treat them with the kind of seriousness that they deserve, you don't really do any research or look into what leads people to this terrible situation. I mean, it's almost irresponsible the way the movie just shows him, he cheated on his wife, so she became an alcoholic and then she died, and then that's why he's depressed. And it's too simple, and it needed more nuance in dealing with such a serious issue.
Yeah, it's very, very heavy-handed, like all that stuff, and it's not subtle in any way. And I must admit as well, it doesn't actually feel believable as well. Yeah, you're dealing with these very real and you know, important issues for the people are dealing with day to day, and this film just never comes across as something that it's even slightly realistic, or it doesn't even really have anything to really say about it in the end. Like I said, the last 15-20 minutes is actually quite odd. It feels like it's kind of cut from a different film.
Almost a different genre of film.
Yeah, oh, it, absolutely. And you can tell again, like, the actors must have thought, hey, this is getting really weird. You can just feel it in their performances that they're not really sure what they're supposed to be doing. And yeah, look, if you give these actors material to work with, like heavy material, which they've all done, it can be really good. McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club, Naomi Watts in 21 Grams, they're pretty powerful films, all those films, and they do it really well. And here it never comes across. So it's a shame, Mark. It's, like I said, not the worst film of the year, definitely very, very far from the best. I don't know if it'll have too many fans as the years draw on, and we're never too sure what might have happened here, but yeah, definitely one of the biggest just flops going around over the last couple of years. It just completely did not live up to expectation or what people thought it would be.
So do you think the reconnaissance might be over?
Oh, I certainly hope not, because I'm enjoying it. I've yet to see Free State of Jones, but I'm very much looking forward to McConaughey's next film, which is called Gold, and I recommend to people to have a look at the trailer for that film. It looks like a bit of a riot, so hopefully it's not over just yet, because I've been enjoying it so far, other than this one.
He was a punchline 5 years ago.
He was. He was a joke, and I think he would have even himself realised that, hey, what's happened to my career?
My guest is Eddie Ivamy from The Movie Guys. We're doing DVD reviews. That was The Sea of Trees, which I'd say I don't necessarily recommend. And now let's turn to another possible clunker, Now You See Me 2. Some of you may remember the film Now You See Me from a couple of years ago. It was a complex, perhaps even some might say convoluted, action film about a bunch of magicians. They've made a sequel. What can you tell us about it?
Well, look, Mark, I wish I could say I was talking about a film I love now after we talked about The Sea of Trees, but sadly, not hitting the great notes at the moment. Now You See Me 2. Look, like you said, there may be a few people, I would imagine just a few, because the first film is quite forgettable in itself. It was a big hit, Now You See Me, back in 2013, and wouldn't you know it, the studio greenlit a sequel pretty quick after that.
A sequel in this day and age? You astound me.
And look, what a thoughtful title as well. I mean, they've gone from Now You See Me to Now You See Me 2, so there's been a lot of effort gone into the just the title of the film. But yeah, look, Now You See Me 2 is a follow-up to that film. It's got a different director now. So the film's first director was Louis La Leteria, who is quite famous for a couple of action films, and now we have John M. Chu, a director that has made films like Step Up, and I think he's had a few other films in that franchise, so he's got some few kind of flashy films in his filmography. But Now You See Me 2 sees these magicians, which are monikered the Horsemen, kind of these mythical magicians that are continuing on a long line of magic people doing heists and exposing bad people in the world, and they're back doing their thing. And look, it must be said, Mark, it's, the star-studded cast is all here other than Australia's Isla Fisher, who jumped ship, and I think she probably did a wise thing there. But we've got Jesse Eisenberg, Mark Ruffalo, Woody Harrelson, Dave Franco, who has about as much charisma as his brother James. Lizzie Kaplan's one of the new additions here, and you've got Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, and also, in a magic film, we've got Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe. But
wow.
I mean, that is literally one of the best casts of the year when you look at it all on that. But sadly, this sequel to Now You See Me is about as convoluted and just uninteresting as the first film. And look, I love a good guilty pleasure movie. I love something that you can go and watch at the movies. It's just complete throwaway fun. But Now You See Me 2 makes zero sense, doesn't even care that it doesn't make sense. And look, it's not as smart as it thinks it is, so there's nothing worse than when you're watching a film and you can tell it thinks a little bit of itself, but it's just really not.
Like, do you remember that TV show, Jonathan Creek?
I don't. I've never actually seen that one, mate, but I know a few fans, so.
So it's a similar idea in that he was a magician, and so he could solve crimes by kind of reverse engineering tricks to work out the murders and things. And the best thing about that was how sort of detailed and scientific and clever the tricks and things were. So it'd all come undone like a Sherlock Holmes puzzle.
Yeah,
and you'd actually learn something.
The new series of Sherlock, which does that as well, which is fantastic fun.
Definitely. And in this one, as you say, it thinks it's really clever with the tricks, but half the time you don't even really know what's going on.
No, it's an odd film because, halfway through it you start thinking, what is actually happening and why are they doing this, or who even cares? And a lot of the things they actually do when it comes to these big kind of magical heisty type things are just so far over the top that it literally, you may as well be watching a sci-fi film. None of it actually makes sense. And the joys of kind of films with magic in it, and you know, you might have a magician as the lead character. The great thing about those is when they feel a bit believable and it feels like you're getting, tricked and kind of conned into these things. But, Now You See Me too. The big kind of reveals in the film are literally just like, oh, is that what they did, or is that why they did it? and it's a real shame because, look, like I said, the cast, if you look at the cast in just the name sense, you think, gee, how could this movie not be, a whole lot of fun? And it's just not. And I probably liked the first film a little bit more, but I didn't love it. And this sequel just took it down a peg. And I think, these actors as well, it's kind of like the Sea of Trees. They must be sensing, hey, what are we actually doing here? And I think it feels like they're all on autopilot in this film. Like people like Woody Harrelson and, Michael Caine, Mark Ruffalo, they're all great actors and all very charismatic, but they all really don't do too much here. Look, Daniel Radcliffe was quite fun in his role. He wasn't in it a lot. So he plays the kind of villain in the film, and he has a bit of scene chewing that he gets to do. And Lizzie Kaplan was a bit of fun in her new role as Lula, kind of a new magician to the team. But I just don't know about this series at all. I really don't. I've heard that they're making a third. And I just can't for the life of me see how it's going to get better. I don't think third time's going to be a charm. And it's almost offensive in a way that they waste such a good cast and potential to have a really fun, almost like an Ocean's 11 type thing, that's really the fun ensemble.
Making a fun, silly action movie with an ensemble cast, it's not like it has to be bad. It's possible, as the Ocean's movie showed, to make one that, while it's not going to, win the Palme d'Or at Cannes, is still entertaining.
Yeah.
The other thing with actors, of course, with someone like Mark Ruffalo or Michael Caine, everyone understands that even if you're a serious actor, sometimes you'll do something for a paycheck. That's okay. That's fine. I'm not going to judge an actor for for taking millions of dollars.
Michael Caine, mate, he's got good history, doesn't he? Jaws and what was the other one? The Swarm or something.
Oh, God. Yeah. But you got to have some sort of limit where you say, all right, I'll do a fun, silly movie, but it can't be this bad.
Yeah, and I must think, like, these people, like I said, they feel like they're like, oh, this is really not that good, and they must be a little bit embarrassed, I think, even though, as you say, people are all for people having a bit of fun with their... They can't always make serious dramas and, you know, work for 6 months of the year on some really hardcore project, but, like, Now You See Me Too, it's kind of what's wrong with Hollywood. They're churning out these films that are just a rehash of the first film that was surprisingly successful, and then they take everything that was okay about that first film and kind of take it down a peg. And this film didn't make near as much of the original, I don't think. But, yeah, like I said, they're still making the third. I don't know if they'll be able to keep the cast unless they've somehow locked them down for, like, a three-film contract when the first one was made. I don't know if anyone would even care when the next one comes out. I think now that we've had two very forgettable entries into the series, is anyone calling out for a third? I'm not sure.
Especially when so many of the actors have previously been in good movies about magic. You know, you mentioned Daniel Radcliffe, obviously my famous magician. Michael Caine was in The Prestige, playing a sort of nice version of his role in this one. Mark Ruffalo was in The Brothers Bloom, where he was sort of a con artist who did tricks and things like that. And they were all really good movies. And they've just turned it out again, but for nothing.
Yeah, and I don't know where they could even take this series as well, like where they could go with these characters. In the first film, that's probably what saved it a little bit. They had these kind of interesting characters that were, at the start, you were kind of into what they were doing, and street performers turned heist magicians and things like that. It was all really over the top, but kind of fun, and it kind of lost its way as it went. And then this one just completely ruins kind of the characters that they've built up. And yeah, like I said, I think it's embarrassing actually for actors of this caliber to be in such a film, and I think people will feel the same watching it. You don't get the sense that even the cast were having fun making it, which sometimes with these films you can see totally from the first 5 minutes that, man, these guys are just having a blast. But Now You See Me Too feels very tired, just uninteresting, very, very run-of-the-mill. Disappointing, but, you know, not to be unexpected from such a Hollywood production, sadly, these days.
All right, well, look, the films we discussed were The Sea of Trees with Matthew McConaughey and Now You See Me Too with Woody Harrelson and Jesse Eisenberg and everyone under the sun in it. But as you say, because not very good, I feel like, you know, I just think we should mention some good movies so we can sort of wash the taste out of our mouth.
I know. I'm starting to lose my faith now. But, look, like we said, Mark, at the start there, if you're looking for a good cinema outing, I would really recommend people get out and have a look at either Sully or Pete's Dragon if they've got a night free for the movies. Both those films I would very much recommend. And look, we are heading into that period, as we said at the start, of some hopefully really good films coming out, and I'm looking forward to hopefully catching a few good ones we can chat about next week on DVD. We really look forward to that period coming out now where we're going to get a whole bunch of films. You know, Girl on the Train, Light Between Oceans, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I think there'll be a lot of really good films just around the corner, which will hopefully be some films that will really make a mark.
Will you give me some hope, Eddie?
Oh, mate, I'm hoping myself. Fingers crossed, because, look, these type of films are... sadly, very very disappointing, but we will hopefully find some. Maybe next week we could do Warcraft. I've heard great things about that.
So. Oh, really?
No. God. No, we'll have a look, mate, but hopefully something really good for people to take home and enjoy on a night in on the couch.
Alrighty. That's Eddie Ivamy from Jordan and Eddie the Movie Guys. Check out their website, jordanandeddie@wordpress.com. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Mark.